And today's Tailwind Tip of the Trail is brought to you by Victor Ballesteros of Victory Sport Design.
Now, those are those awesome aid station bags.
Drop bags. Yep, you've used them.
Well, I have a couple of them. I've used them at races, and in fact, when it's time for me to take it to a race, I have to find them because either my wife or daughter has hijacked them to use them for other purposes. They've got dual purposes, those bags.
Victor, thanks for joining us. What is your Tailwind Nutrition tip of the trail today?
Tip of the trail. As many wise words have been shared with me by many a veteran and beginner runner, because sometimes beginner runners can have some pretty wise views of how to approach ultra running. The most simplest thing, I think, is just no matter what's going on, no matter what's happening in the race, it's one foot in front of the other. Whether or not your mind is telling you, I can't do this anymore, or your gut is telling you, I want to get rid of everything that's inside of me, just try to keep forward momentum. Because a lot of times, whether or not you totally throw everything up or you're suddenly you start to think in a more positive way, it's just always better than just stopping and sitting in some chair and thinking in that negative space of, oh my God, I think this is the end of my event. So, yeah, simple words, one foot in front of the other.
Simple words, you're right, but and I want to add to that if your body is telling you to get rid of things either south or north, either direction, that you need to listen to your body. It's telling you the right thing to do. Do not try to fight that off. Do not try to hold back.
You'll always feel better when it's over.
How many times have you done that and said, oh, man, I am glad I didn't wait another minute?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and of course, there's definitely the occasions where, you know, again, listening to your body, you know, it is the right thing to say, okay, no, I do need to stop and sit down. You know, but so often, that's not the case. It's, you know, it's just a matter of, it's the name of the game. You know, we our stomachs get kind of sick, and that's the cool thing about a lot of new nutrition products that are coming out that are helping us be able to keep the things we're putting in us in these events in us so that they help us. But sometimes, like, I've been one of my best races ever that I look back on was my first Western States, and I was sick to my stomach and at Forest Hill, and we had just left, and I just got through everything up. But I kept on walking, and I felt great. And I know so many people who have, like, had that experience where they're like, oh, man, I just threw up, and I felt awesome after that. So kept on moving one foot in front of the other.
And so, that, you know, once you get on the trail, I'm afraid to go back to road races because I've been so spoiled that I don't have to worry about a bathroom location, right, because you're on the trail. If you're sick, you don't have to worry about an intersection or Mrs. McGillicuddy's front yard. You're just out there in nature, and you can take advantage of the
It's biodegradable.
As long as you take, you know, so what is the etiquette? You need to pull off the trail and at least get off the trail enough where you're not in plain sight, right? That's a positive.
Well, for sure. If it's not coming up, you know, in the up direction, you know, side of the trail, definitely a little bit of distance from the trail. Although sometimes, I mean, if it's just throwing up, I mean, you can go far enough off the trail where I don't think you have to get too far off the trail. I think that's fine.
On an evening part of a recent long run, that the pacer diligently doing his job, you couldn't really tell who the runner and the pacer were because they were both bent over, but one was definitely coaching, had the hand on the runner's back.
Holding your hair back, Don?
No, not me. And I have short hair, Scott wore, but had his hand on his back, coaching him through it. And I said, now that's a pacer that's going the extra mile. You know, I took that guy's name and I said, hey, you know, next year, if your runner's not busy, I think I'll take you. So Tailwind Nutrition tip is to keep it in you, not on you.
One foot in front of the other. Just keep on going. Even if you have to throw up, just keep on going.
There you go.
It'll always get better.
That's right. Yeah, you can do it.
You get further down the trail walking. Sitting never gets you closer to the finish line ever.
Yeah.
So we thank Tailwind Nutrition for this tip. Go on to their website, tailwindnutrition.com. Take the Tailwind Challenge. It's more than an electrolyte drink. It's a nutrition drink. It's all that you need. It's the calories. It's the electrolytes. It's a savory flavor. It's not too sweet.
It's a way of life, Scott.
It's a way of life?
I don't know. It's powerful.
Go out and run.
Well, if you keep on sprinkling it on your tomatoes, I think it can become a way of life.
Thanks, Victor, for your tip. This episode brought to you by Audible.
Yes.
What is Audible, Scott?
Audible is an online resource of over 150,000 audiobooks that you can download, put on your iPod, put on your MP3 player, put on a CD, if you have a CD player in your car. I've been a member for over 13 years, and I have a lot of different titles. I love listening to books on audio. It's a great way to spend drive time, run time. And they are kind enough to help sponsor the Trail Runner Nation podcast. So we want to let you know about it. There's also a free download available to you if you go to audiblepodcast.com/TRN. Now, I'm going to tell you a couple great books that I've listened to over the years. I kind of dig, you know, we're masochists as trail runners, and I like to listen to books about people enduring. And there's two that I would like to recommend. One is, it was made into a movie recently. It's called Between a Rock and a Hard Place.
Oh, yeah.
They made a movie about that. That one is a great listen to. And the other one is...
Now, Scott, who is... I mean, you may not remember name, but...
Aaron Ralston is this guy's name.
And he went and ran Leadville.
He's the only person that was ever allowed to run Leadville 100 without paying.
And he has a standing invitation to come back because the guy is such a stud.
He's a tough
guy.
Second one that I would highly recommend is John Krakauer's Into Thin Air. It's about climbing Mount Everest and the tragedy that happened up there. I can't remember what year. It was in the 90s. But both great books. And they'll keep you running.
I remember when you listened to both of those because you shared them with me on the trail. So good stuff.
Yep.
So go to Audible.
Audiblepodcast.com/TRN/TRN. You get a free download. You get a 30-day trial. And it'll be good for us, too.
Yep. So go out and do it. Sign up and grab yourself a book and go out and listen.
Moss. And today's Petzl Trail Running Strategy is brought to you by Katie DeSplinter. We've had her on our podcast a number of times. Boyfriend Dominic Grossman and Katie have been on our podcast. She recently wrote an article in the September issue of Ultra Running Magazine called Home for the Holidays. And so if you don't have Ultra Running Magazine, subscribe, go out and check that article. Katie is an amazing writer.
Absolutely, and an amazing trail runner too. So she brings the reality of the trail to the pen and paper.
Yes. So Katie, do you consider yourself a writer or a trail runner?
Oh.
No, you don't.
No, you don't. I'm joking.
That was rough, Scott.
I just put you on the spot. What's your trail strategy today?
My biggest piece of advice that I always give people, especially people running their first 100, is there is a such thing as too slow. And that freaks everybody out because they're so used to hearing everybody tells them, you know, there's no such thing as too slow. Like you can just, or no such thing. Did I say that right?
No, you said it exactly right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No such thing as too slow. They have that ingrained in their head, but I actually think there is a such thing as too slow. And I've seen a lot of people that, if they would have just moved with a purpose and a little bit more efficiently, they wouldn't have gotten themselves cut off. And even if you're not worried about cutoff, there at some point it becomes a law of attrition out there. And I can honestly say that races that I've been out there for 6 and 7 hours longer, if something went wrong or whatever, that's been way harder than the races where I redlined the whole time and came in under 24 hours. And so For me, I just kind of try to remember that I should always, in ultra running, especially in a 100-mile race, you should always feel in control of yourself. And, you know, you can very easily tell if you're working maybe a little bit too hard, might pay for it later. But there is the converse of that as well, that it shouldn't be easy. It's running 100 miles. So
exactly.
You should still push yourself a bit and try to get on with it, and you'll end up having a much better experience out there.
I think on the topic of slowing down, there may be a time that you need to slow down, but the statement, like you've made, just making sure you're always slow isn't going to give you your optimal outcome on your race. But
no.
During that racing event, you may recognize that things are going south and you better back it off a little bit to regain control and stay on the right side of that metabolic line and then push it out a little bit more. It's a constant tug of war, slow down, speed up, and monitoring that very important gauge, that bonk gauge, Scott, the bonk gauge.
I have a watch that has a bonk gauge.
Do you? Well, Katie DeSplinter, I think, you know, once again, we just called her out of the blue because we saw that she was online out there somehow. She steps off of her day job.
May get in trouble.
No. Well, if her boss is a true trail runner, that boss will be totally cool with this. And she just drops some major knowledge on us, just straight from the cubicle.
Straight from the cubicle. We should start a new little segment on our podcast.
Straight from the cubicle?
Straight from the cubicle. Thank you very much, Katie.
Katie DeSplinter, what's next for you? What race you have coming up?
I actually just signed up a few days ago for the Bear 100, which is in 2 weeks.
Wow.
So.
Nice. Okay. Well, best of luck out there. We'll be watching for you.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Thank
Katie.
You.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Are we recording?
Welcome to another edition of Trail Runner Nation. I'm Don Freeman.
And I'm Scott War. And we are thrilled. It has been a long, long summer.
Scott, what's one word beyond thrilled? Because that's where we are.
Ecstatic.
Ecstatic. That's the one we're going to use.
We have with us tonight our good friend and mentor, Sonny Blende. Sonny, thanks for joining us.
I'm happy to.
And we reached out to Sonny because in the latest edition, I think it's a September issue of Ultra Running Magazine, Sonny wrote an amazing article that you all have to read. I'm not even going to say what the title. What is the title?
Hydration and Fueling During a Scorcher.
A Scorcher. So, Don?
Yes.
Sonny, has this ever happened to you? You've trained all summer for your event, whether it's an A race or a B race, and you look at the weather 2 days out and you notice that it's going to be much, much hotter than what you've trained for. What do you do? How do you change your race strategy?
Well, that's a very good question. And probably one of the main things that you just said is how do you change your race strategy? Well, let's look at shoes. Would you change the pair of shoes that you were going to wear
You could tell Sonny's an educator. She's starting us off and getting us thinking. She's not going right to the punch. And
I would say if it's going to be hot, I'm going to take a hole punch and I'm going to punch some holes in the sides of my shoes. So that's a little more ventilation.
Right. Okay.
That's most people's problems. It's all of a sudden they go, oh, wow, I'm going to need to take more electrolytes. I need to drink more water. I'm going to need to rethink my whole fueling plan. And maybe they would have needed to rethink their whole fueling plan if they had a couple months, but not in a couple days. And I think the question is not how should I fuel differently, but the question is I'm probably not going to set a PR today. I know I need to slow down. So if you look at all the statistics of these races that are in the really hot weather, very rarely are PRs set. Very rarely are course records broken. Everybody slows down a little. So why not plan for that slowdown and have a great race instead of get into trouble, be over on the sideline, you know, in some medical tent, slowing down anyway and maybe finishing the race, but not having the race that you really trained for.
So the first
thing is pace.
Yeah, I think that is a very, very important point, that you need to get your mind set around, I'm not going to be doing a PR today, and I need to slow down. That's probably the biggest adjustment in your strategy on a hot, on a seasonably hot day.
Right. Is Western States this year, you know, right here. So there are a lot of seasoned runners out there that got into trouble. And I think it's probably because they tried to change that fueling pattern or fueling system. And you just can't do it all of a sudden, because what happens in the heat is it just costs you more energy to keep your core temperature cool. And you need to keep your core temperature cool. And if you decide you're going to do it some other way, your brain will decide for you and you'll crash on the side. So that's probably the main thing. Just look at going at a slower rate. However, to backtrack even a little further, you can prepare yourself anyway for changing conditions. And one of the ways you do that is with heat acclimation. So heat acclimation helps everybody, not just the people who are going to run in a hot race. But as you become heat acclimated, and you can do it in as quick as 2 weeks, but certainly if you're planning on doing this before your race anyway, take a little bit of time. You first increase the amount of time that you are in the heat. So if you're running X miles a week, you're going to take a little bit of that and start to run in the heat. As you get more and more time in the heat, then you up the intensity in the heat. So your body is very smart, and our body is very adaptable. And I think people forget that. It'll adapt fast if it needs to. For instance, if you see a bear on the trail, you're going to get the adrenaline. You're going to get all this, and your body's going to really adapt to that. If you have a little bit more time, your body's going to adapt in a way that will now be incorporated in your training, so that now that's your new way of fueling. So that heat acclimation really helps. And it helps, you know, with all kinds of things. It helps, it increases your VO2 max. It helps your lactate threshold, your maximum power, your maximum cardiac output. It'll help change that whether or not you race in the heat or not. So it's a good thing to do.
I think that's one of the things that I learned in your article, Sunny, is even if you're not planning to run or a race in the heat, go out and heat acclimate, because that's going to increase your performance all the way around. Like you just said, it's going to increase your lactate threshold. It's going to increase your VO2 max. I had no idea.
It's similar to sleeping in an oxygen tent. It's kind of another way of increasing your...
Yeah, it's similar to altitude training. That's right. It's going to create some positive effects on your body. It's also going to create... Think of all the people who did that for Western States this year. You know, it also affected them positively mentally, because now they already were heat trained somewhat. What you don't want to do is prehydrate, take more electrolytes than you're used to, and all of a sudden now your body is trying to decide whether it's bloated. It's all of a sudden you're starting to volume replace instead of stay in a fluid balance. And what I mean by that is fluid balance is, think of a nice ripe plum. That's in good fluid balance. If you take that plum and compare it to a prune, that's dehydrated. If you take that plum and have it get overripe and start to split because it's too big for its casing anymore, that's hyponatremic. That's bloated. That's overhydrating. So you want to stay in that middle. And the way our body does that is we take in the water, and our sodium and our electrolytes that we're either taking in food and or replacement drinks or whatever, or capsules, that is helping us retain some of that water. But what the training does is, the training, the heat acclimation is your body continues to exercise in the heat, your kidneys start to reabsorb some of that sodium and potassium that we would normally have ready to go out into our sweat system or out in our urine. So our body adapts by being able to reabsorb that. So you sweat as much, still keeping your core temperature down, but you're not sweating out so many electrolytes. So if you're adapted, you don't need to take in a whole lot more electrolytes. I mean, maybe a little, but not a ton.
You know, I want to back up and make sure that this is reiterated. On a hot day, if you're not heat acclimated, I think a
slow down.
Yeah, slow down. But I think that a knee-jerk response is, I need to keep my core temperature low, so I'm going to drink more. And I from what you explain in the article and what you explained here is that is a could be potentially dangerous.
You could become a plum that's ready to split.
Right.
Right. Exactly.
Hyponatremic. I forgot what I was going to say.
Well, I think I interrupted you, but the what I want to say is that drinking more water does not always keep your core temperature down. There's slightly different mechanisms. Yes, of course it helps, but there's other things to keep your core temperature down. In Western states, go soak in the river a little while. Well, drink your fluids, drink your fluids cold if you can. Certainly watch what you're wearing. Wear lighter clothes, white clothes, you know, different ways of keeping your core temperature down that way, not just with drinking fluids. And another kind of fallacy is throwing water over your head doesn't always help keep your core temperature down. Soaking does. So a wet rag around your neck, you know, where you have it more than a few seconds, that will start to decrease your core temperature.
There may be nothing better than a bandana filled with ice tied around your neck. Mm-hmm. I just never did that because I thought maybe it was heavy. I don't know what I was thinking, but as soon as someone said, get over here, and they did that, I thought I was in heaven. It drips down your body, both sides. Your jugular veins are right there next to your neck, right on that ice, just cooling things down. I think that there could be nothing finer than a bandana filled with ice.
It helps a lot right there. It helps to cool your veins down, your cardiac arteries too, everything, as long as you're a lean ultra runner. If you're an overweight, obese person and you're trying to put something around your neck, it's not going to help as much.
Well, you've got to get a bigger bandana.
You do.
How big is this person you're describing?
But I think that's part of, you know, the training. People can't – we hear rules and things, and the rules aren't always for ultra runners.
Now, Sunny, I want to bring another thing up that you wrote in the, read in the article that I've been wrestling for a long time, and I'm becoming a believer. But you said if it's a hot day – that you need to, one, as you've already stated, slow down. But the other thing you said is put on some sleeves. And I've been resistant to doing that, but I hear it so many times, Jimmy Dean Freeman, put on sleeves. We're talking to the Badwater competitors. They're wearing stuff over their arms. So can you say it one more time so I hear it from you and I'll really be a believer?
Yeah, put on light-colored clothing and put on sleeves. I saw Scott Jurek in the first Badwater he did, and he was the only one in the start line that had long pants and long sleeves on, and the rest is history.
Yeah, absolutely.
What do you think about, you know, I think Jimmy or maybe it was Shannon Farr Greer that took these sleeves and put water on them.
Exactly.
Will that
now
help?
You've got a cooling effect. It's like an air conditioner, because now if your sweat drips off you, that's not cooling you. But if you have something wet on, that can cool you. A wet cotton T-shirt, like we ran in decades ago, isn't necessarily the best thing because that can chafe. But these new fabrics, these sleeves, are great.
We were talking earlier about recognizing that it's going to be a hot day and not expect a PR. In fact, we had that very wisdom dispensed by Tim Tweetmeyer out there at the beginning of States this year when he said, it's a crazy hot year. Let's look at our last crazy hot year, 2006, and let's see the time differences between, last year, which was a cooler year, and some of these other years that were hot. And he showed that there was a six-hour difference in some of the finishes with the top percent guys. 6 hours that the heat just slowed them down. So just like a course can be challenging because there's a lot of climbing on it or a lot of ascent, a lot of vertical, a hot day is just like, you know, a flat course compared to a hilly course.
That's characteristic of the course.
You just have to accept that and hope that you're, one, acclimated, and that improves your chances, your knowledge base, and your heat acclimation. It improves your chances to finish stronger than maybe you would have, but you just can't go hit those same numbers.
Right. And you have to have a plan for that scorcher. You can't hit the same numbers, but you can do some things. The heat acclimation is one. A couple of other things is what kind of food you're taking in. So usually when we get hot, a couple of things happen. One, we're not that hungry. So you have to be careful in the heat when you're in an all-day hot event that you don't underfuel, so you don't fuel less than what you've trained to fuel. So one of the things that I think in training that you should try and do is get some high-energy calories. You know, one, some of your long runs, don't eat what you normally eat, but try some things that are a boost or ensure some of that that's higher calories but in liquid. So you're getting something that doesn't have to be digested like a sandwich or something like that. If it's cooler, real food's great. If it's really hot, maybe some of these products are good because they're easier to digest. Heat slows your absorption of calories, so you actually get them in a longer amount of time than it would be if it was cooler. And it also slows down that gastric emptying. And that gastric emptying, you know, we always come back to that as nutritionists because that's what is upsetting to everybody. That's where people run into gut issues. So now if food's sitting in your gut a little longer and it's hotter, you're not getting it. It's costing you more calories to get that through your gut because it's taking longer to get through. So you really want low residue foods then, and maybe high calorie liquid. And the other part of that low residue, that kind of stuff is get the fiber out. This might not be the day to eat the banana at the aid station. It might be better to make sure you get white bread, no crust and banana potato skins and that kind of thing. So think, you know, low residue, and then think higher calorie liquids. So now you're getting the same amount of calories in, but you're getting it in easier to digest food.
Absolutely. What about energy gels? Those are very easy to down.
Fast absorption. Yeah, I think energy gels are fine. I don't think they're, you know, when it gets hotter, I don't think the energy gels really change anything. There's no fiber in those. The only thing is the water that you're drinking with them, if you can get it cooler, it's going to get out of your stomach faster. For some reason, cool or cold liquids, our stomach doesn't like it very much, so it gastric empties quick. It says, get out of here and get into the intestine.
Oh, that's interesting to know. I didn't know that.
Yeah, so I've never heard of anyone putting their gels on ice, but possibly that might be a way to go.
I tuck them underneath my bandana on my neck.
With the ice.
You bet. Hey, let's just kind of back up just for a second, because that's sometimes this is a out and back course is what we're running with, a lot of loops. We talk about running in the morning, and we've all experienced that it's so much easier to run in the morning than the afternoon. And I have experienced some positive training effects from forcing some afternoon hot runs, especially even if the race is going to be in a cooler area, even if I don't expect to hit the heat. I just know that if I put some heat afternoons in, it's going to feel just awesome to be out there on a cool race day all day. And I have experienced that metabolic and physiologic benefit from being a heat runner, even if it's going to be a cold race.
It's true. It's just the more variety you can give your body, the more experience it has with the different adaptability. So don't always do the same thing, just like adding a little cross training. It's just like adding the hills and the downs. If you train all the time on flat and then go and do a mountain run, you're not going to do as well.
So I want to get back, like we say, we're kind of bouncing around here. I want to talk a little bit more about hydration, because I want to know, how do I know, if, let's say it's a really hot day and I haven't had a chance to train in the heat or become heat acclimated to the heat, and I'm out there on the race day, how do I know whether I'm overhydrating or not?
The best way is if your crew has a scale and get on the scale. And practice, you know, just get on the scale two or three times, you know, whenever your crew meets you, and you'll start to see. Because it's not that accurate. Now you're sweaty. You know, try and take your pack off so you at least have that off. But, you know, you don't want to spend too much time doing it. But check on the scale, because if you really start to get hyponatremic, you're going to be gaining in the 6, 7, 8 pound range. So then you know you've gained too much water. Number one easiest thing, I think, is to check your watch band. Just see if your watch band is starting to get tight on your arm, on your wrist.
I look at my wedding ring. If my wedding ring looks like it's about ready to cut my finger off, it's time to back off.
Exactly.
I check my bandana around my neck with my gels. If they're hard to get the gels out, I know, you know it's time.
So that's the best way, because you can't really, you know, I mean, if you could do an iStat test, it'd be great, you know, but that's not going to work for the masses. So if you did a blood sodium test, you would know. But you will probably have an idea of how much you're drinking, too. And if you suspect that you might be drinking too much, if you're drinking and not paying attention, drink to your thirst. You know, it's really hard to, you know, pound into everybody's head. Drink ad lib. If you're thirsty, drink. And if you're drinking and you're really not that thirsty, but your pacer's beside you telling you to drink, 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 you know, have your pacer every once in a while ask, are you thirsty, instead of drink.
I think that's a great idea. I think pacers should be aware of hydration on a hot day. And they should, exactly, instead of saying, hey, you haven't been drinking, say, are you thirsty? I was going to...
You get a little brain dead out there.
Oh, yeah. Define thirst, please. What do you mean?
So let's say that you made the mistake and you've been drinking a lot, too much. And you notice that your wedding ring or your watch or your bandana is getting a little tight. How do you overcome that in the middle of a race?
Okay, listen to this answer very carefully. The first thing you need to do is slow down. Nothing else is going to help if you don't slow down. If it's really bad, you need to stop. If you are very, very bloated, the way we nutritionally attend to that, if somebody's up 6 or 7 or 8 pounds, is we usually give them something like 4 bouillon cubes in a 1/4 cup of water. And what that does is now your blood sodium, your blood is now really sky high. You've got way too much salt in it. And what that does is it draws the water out of your interstitial tissues where you're bloated. And it draws that back into the blood, gets the blood salt volume back to normal, and you start peeing. But the problem is if you're still running and your body's trying to do two things at once, get on down the road and also try and get this blood volume, this blood sodium thing back in balance, you've got some major problems. You must slow down.
So it may be a good idea in your drop bag to have some bouillon cubes, or at least have your crew have some, right?
Your crew has some. Your crew has some. Your medical. When you really get hyponatremic, you're starting to act a little drunk. And, you know, does a drunk know when not to open the next bottle of beer?
Well, no, he knows. He knows when to open. He opens them one after the next. Go ahead and slow down and stop. And you said listen to that carefully, and so I did. One of our common themes here on all these podcasts have been listen to your body and listen to what it's telling you. And how many times have we forced ourselves to keep on going and keep that pace and keep driving? Because if you don't keep going, you're a quitter and you're a loser and you'll lose your time. But what our body is telling us loud and clear is slow down. So it makes things hurt. It'll make your feet hurt. It'll cramp you. It will play all kinds of physiologic tricks on you, psychological and physiological, to get you to slow down. And so I think, Sonny, what you've said, and you know how profound it was because you told us to listen to it, that if we feel like walking, then we probably should be walking so that we can get our body back in balance that you were talking about, so that we can get running again. So I really like that.
If you are by yourself, definitely. If you've got a pacer with you looking at different things, And your pacer knows you, which most pacers do. I mean, every once in a while somebody picks up a pacer, but most pacers know their runners. They'll know whether they're just, you know, complaining because they're low blood sugar or just because they, you know, are just complaining at that point, or whether, you know, something's really kind of wrong. So what I try and tell people is to have a plan, you know, have a nutrition plan, have a fueling plan, and implement it. You know, I've always told people, set your watches, you know, set your watches so you remember. But if the watch goes off and you're thinking, I just really don't want to drink anymore, be prepared to be a little flexible, you know. So get the plan going down, because if you have no plan, you really are going to be, you know, in a 50-100 miles, that's going to be a problem. So have a plan, but be flexible. And if your body's telling you that your plan's not working, first just slow down a little, and that might be all your body needs to readjust and to go again. It's a little bit like throwing up, you know. I tell my clients, you know, go out and practice and eat till you throw up, because then you know how much you can eat. And now you do that in training.
Thanks
now,
for the permission to go out and binge.
I did that last night at Outback Steakhouse. It was our anniversary. I ate just like
That's
you told me.
That's different.
Oh.
But, you know, it's the same sort of thing. Slow down a little and see, you know, if it will pass. So, you know, give yourself 10, 20 minutes. See if you're starting to come back around a little bit. And I think people are, they've got a light up ahead. They've got they just passed somebody and they don't want that person to pass them again. You know, we play head games all the time.
Yeah, that's dangerous.
And we play head games partly to get us through 24 to 30 hours of running. We need to play head games.
Yeah.
But we also need to say, hey, it's okay. It's okay to slow down a little bit. And every once in a while, if someone has gotten way beyond where they should, either really hyponatremic or way out, it's maybe better to just stop and be safe. There's a race another day.
You know, I don't know how many things can't be corrected with this slowing down principle that you're talking about. And we're not trying to make people slower runners and become walkers out there. That's not the message, because I'm certain from my practical experience is that you go up and down throughout races, and often you end up running, you know, shortly after you've walked a little bit just to recover. And so I'm thinking that just about everything that goes south on us can be at least corrected, because our body is so good at fixing things, you know, metabolically.
Exactly.
And it's just, it has that chance, but we just can't keep driving it into the ground. We've talked about getting into a hole, and the deeper you drive yourself metabolically into these holes, or even mentally, you know, just becoming down about the race, the further you go down in this hole, the harder it is to get out. And so
right.
If you start walking for 5 minutes, your hole may be pretty small to get out. But if you make yourself run for 2 more hours, you may be so deep, you don't even know, you can't even see light anymore.
And it's harder to come back from that.
Yeah.
You know, I've been careering a lot of people in bad water over the years, and at times it's easier to get hyponatremic in bad water just because it's so long and it's so hot and all the elements that you're facing there. But, you know, you can come back after getting hyponatremic and come back, but now you're not the same person coming back. Now you're a little fragile, and it's easy to go back into that hyponatremic state again. And I do think this just slowing down just a little, just giving yourself a little bit of time, because I don't think we realize this, but when we practice, when we are training for our big ultra race, and we get tired in a training run, what do? We bag it, we slow down. That's what we've done in training. Very seldom will you go out on a long training run, and if it's starting to go south, will you continue it?
Right.
We've trained ourselves to slow. We've trained ourselves to do that, so why are you doing it different in the race?
Under the nutrition heading in Ultra Running Magazine, Sunny Blende, sports nutritionist, hydration and fueling during a scorcher, I could have highlighted every single paragraph through there. but the one that I chose to highlight, even in a different color, was stop messing too much with Mother Nature.
Yes.
You know, expand on it. I'd like to just say it 500 times, because it's that great of a sentence. I think it's ultra running in its completeness in that sentence. But tell us what you mean by that, Sunny.
Well, we push our limits as ultra runners, and our bodies kind of know when we're getting to those limits. And when you continue to do that, your body starts adapting so that it can do a lot more. Think of before you ever were an ultra runner and you were running 10Ks, you know, and you heard somebody ran 100 miles and you thought they were absolutely nuts. Mm-hmm. You know, when family gatherings and things, you know, your spouse tells you to shut up about it because these people don't understand. And, you know, they don't understand. But as you have become this different person, adapting to be able to do this and go to work the next day, your body has adapted to all these things. And it's adapted way before we had sports nutrition products and electrolytes and a lot of this. I mean, water's kind of a go-to. You know, you can count on water to be the same all the time. So we need to get back to some of those basics. Our bodies don't change really, really fast. They adapt. And we need to give it some time to adapt and then trust that adaptation. I think we don't trust it. We see ads and we see a lot of marketing going, you know, you need this and you need this and don't get caught without this. And yet the Tarahumara Indians and people out there running all the time, you know, they don't have any sports stores to go to and they manage fine.
I think it comes back to one of the things that we try to do, which is always train in race type situations. I mean, that's one of the things that we find a course that looks like your race course, you know, race, you know, run in the afternoons if you're going to be on a hot course. We're always trying to simulate race day so that we can adapt. I think that's critical.
That's smart. And I think the same thing, you should try and assimilate that and the same thing, you know, see what the race course is giving for their at their aid stations for their nutrition products and their fuel. Try that because you have to carry a lot less if that works for you. I think as the sport of ultra running is changing and changing, I think we're going to less is more. Not only less calories is more, but less things in the product. You know, just going a lot of places. I'm going to be interviewed for an article on the Nepalese ultra running team. And I thought, Nepalese ultra running team. I thought anybody who could even do anything in the mountains of Nepal was an ultra runner.
Right.
And, you know, they fuel with rice balls and soy milk and chickpeas, garbanzo beans. Hmm. And that works for them. So we can, our body adapts to many things. And I don't think on race morning, when you hear it's going to be 10 or 20 degrees hotter than normal, you need to go into this big panic and start changing things. See how you're doing. Go with your plan. If it's your plan's continuing to work, then you don't need to change it. You've already adapted. If your plan's not working, that's when you want to be a little bit more flexible. But why change it at the start? You don't even know.
How many veteran runners have you come across? To this, you too, Scott, and anybody that's still listening, which should be everybody with Sunny on the line. How many veterans have you come across, and they'll just say, hey, it's just one of those days, or this isn't my day today, or they'll just take
what the day gives you.
Very confidently, they won't feel defeated. They just understand the elements are what they are, and we're going to get it done. It's just going to be different. And I just love that. Like Wayne Miles is a guy that's a local runner here that has run, you know, more miles than most people have driven in a car, and he feels 1,000% confident if something's going sideways on him. He just said, this is the elements, and this is what I'm going to make it through with what's here. Love that stuff.
It's good. It's good to do that. And you can also plan somewhat. You can, if it's a really hot day, don't try and maintain your pace when you're going out, you know, at 8 in the morning or 6 whenever the race started. And don't try and maintain your pace 12 noon through 3. Go a little slower then. And when the night comes on and it gets cooler, speed up a little bit. Plan your whole race. It's not probably going to be a scorcher in the middle of the night.
Oh, that's wisdom. And there are people that have won races and did extreme, have silver buckles with this same strategy of walking early or walking when and bringing their body back to life. You bet. This isn't a loser strategy. This is a winner strategy.
Pick them off later.
This is a winner strategy. It is.
Right.
I have a maybe a little bit diverge on the topic here. Let's talk about heat and cramping. How does heat affect cramping, muscle cramps?
Yeah, if you could answer that with total authority, you would be the guru.
That's why I'm asking you.
We don't totally understand cramping. We do know that cramping is probably one of the first signs of heat illnesses. So, you know, you're that stabbing pain in your calf and you've fallen over and you know, well, something's wrong. You know, is it an electrolyte imbalance? Probably, but have scientists been able to figure out exactly who needs what yet? No. If you're starting to get that, I would certainly look back and go, okay, am I behind in something? Did I do something different? Again, you know, once you get the cramp, you're probably going to have to roll it out, massage it out somewhat, and walk it out, you know, walk it back again. The next step in that is going to be heat exhaustion. And heat exhaustion is where your core temperature is really going up somewhat. I definitely see this in bad water. Heat exhaustion is a time where you might want to get your runner down on a towel, get some ice under their armpits, on their groin, around their neck, and really try and cool their core temperature down. It's kind of hard to keep going and cool your core temperature down. Certainly if you're near a river, get in the river.
At what point do we know that someone's reached heat exhaustion?
They're on the towel with ice on their groin.
Yeah, well, they are really having trouble, and they're starting to stagger a little bit. They're out of it a little bit. That's the same time that you've got to be checking for hyponatremia, too. But if their watch band is, you know, sliding up and down their wrists, and it's been hot, and their core temperature, either if they've stopped sweating, they're getting worse, and you really want to stop them. That, you know, once you get past heat exhaustion, then you're starting to really get into serious problems, which, by the way, don't usually happen in ultra-running races.
We get hyponatremic a lot more. Back up. I think that's something important to know. Say that again, Sonny.
Well, you get heat cramps, then you go to heat exhaustion, then you go to heat stroke. Heat stroke is serious, but heat stroke is not something that usually happens in ultra races. That's a pretty serious thing. People slow down, people stop before they get to heat stroke. Otherwise, we would have had a lot of deaths, a ton of deaths in ultra running. So people don't usually go there, especially if they're trained. So I think we need to stop thinking that that's the next step and we're going to need to, you know, give somebody a ton of electrolytes and a ton more water. What you really want to do is make sure that they're not hyponatremic on top of it. So weighing's good, you know, checking the wrist, checking if they're swollen, you know, check their waistband. You know, if somebody's really out of it, is their waistband, is it imprinted upon their skin because they're bloated? That's different than heat stroke.
As we talk about our core temperature rising or just body temperature rising, and one of the remedies, obviously, has been the theme through here, is slow down. But something you brought up in the article that I really didn't think about is that as muscles are contracting, they're creating heat. There's heat in the breaking of molecules and the old Krebs cycle and all the things that we know that happen inside of at the cellular level. And these are creating heat. And the faster we go, the more times, the more heat's generated. So slowing down really is key, just based on pace and some of that heat that's built up from muscle contraction.
That's a good point that you bring up.
It's your point, son. That's your point, Sonny.
Another definition of heat stroke is heat stroke is when you didn't listen, and now your body just stops. You know, your body heat stroke is a complete failure of your body's thermostat. And what happens is you stop sweating. Your skin becomes very dry. And we don't see that a lot. We don't really see that a lot in races.
You know, Sonny, I think you explained it here, and maybe you can help us walk us through the way that you can in your very simple explanations. Back to what Don said, when you're out there and your muscles are heating up and it's hot, your body tries to regulate that by sending more blood to those extremities. It's pulling blood away from your digestive system. That's when you start having digestive issues because there's not as much focus there. Can you explain that whole physiological change?
So, The first thing is when you start exercising, period, your body says, okay, we need to get the nutrients out to the muscles that are exercising. So our energy is going to the muscles that are working. And it depends on, again, on our rate. If we're running fast, our body thinks we're really in trouble. That lion's pretty close to us. So we send a lot of blood out and a lot of energy out there. We just stop digesting food. And also, if you think about it, you stop being hungry. So when you finish a long run, right when you finish that run for the next 20, 30 minutes, it's hard sometimes to do that 30-minute window because you're really not that hungry. Because your body says, hey, you didn't have time to worry about food. You were worrying about danger. So then as you keep going and keep going, now your core temperature is getting hotter. And now your body needs to also get all that blood out to the skin so that it can get cool, so that the blood can get cool and recirculate cool blood, not hot blood. So now you've got something else that's taking up more calories. So as you get hotter and hotter, you actually don't have the same amount of energy to do what your body normally does, run forward. In other words, if you don't slow down, if you try to keep the same pace, now your body's requiring more energy to stay cool. So if you just try and eat some more energy, your digestive stuff is shut off. You can see that you're starting to just really run into trouble. You're doing everything wrong. You're trying to give yourself more calories. Well, you don't have the energy to digest the calories that you already had because you already are taking extra calories to try and cool your system off.
Yeah, I wonder if anybody has done any studies, and maybe you know, Sunny, that as we adapt, and amazing things happen during adaptation, things that we haven't documented, haven't thought of, because the body's so complex that, you know, the things that are happening internally that we will discover later, oh, this is why this works. Many of the things that are passed down from one runner generation to the next generation are things that work, but aren't really explained yet. I wonder if, and that's my theory anyway, and Scott's shaking his head, so it's our theory, that's good. So I wonder if in fact we're training out in the heat, if we actually end up with higher volume of blood, our body starts realizing that the only way to really survive in this type of heat and end up with nutrition and oxygen exchanging as it should is we need a little more plasma here. We need a little more blood.
That's where, you know, the altitude training comes in. Altitude training will increase your blood volume. Just running will increase your blood volume. I mean, long-term running will increase it. But altitude training will increase your blood volume, and you will do better at sea level. So again, it's like the heat acclimation. Even if you're not running in the heat, it's going to do you some good. The same sort of thing with the altitude training. You'll end up with more plasma volume, more blood volume, which will also help. You're not going to get dehydrated. You're not going to look like the prune so fast. All this is good. And then just to throw in this on the other side, science can only take you so far. I love the fact that, according to science, Mark Allen and Dave Scott could not have run the marathons that they ran in the first couple Ironmans as fast as they did. You know, science proved they couldn't do it, but they did do it. So all the things that I'm saying and all the articles that you read with the science base, they're good, but just take it with a grain of salt. If it really doesn't work for you, listen to your body. You know, listen to your body and do what seems right for your body. If you're thirsty, drink. You know, if you're having some problems and you're really, really hot and you never had that ice bandana around your neck again, okay, you can put that ice bandana around your neck. If it drives you nuts, you can take it off. If you take 5 more electrolytes, you can't just take them out again. Things you can change.
Sunny, take off your your nutrition hat for a moment, and we're just going to talk for a second.
Are you setting her up?
No, I want her to feel free that she can just speak it well and not worry about somebody checking a reference on
her. Should
we
tell her we're going to stop recording?
No.
Okay.
Nobody believes that, Scott. Nobody believes that. Okay, so on one side of the coin is science. What's on the other side of the coin? You said there's two sides of this. One, science, and you can't always just crunch the numbers and tell you who's going to win the race. What are some of these other variables that are on the other side of this coin?
common sense. Common sense. You know, do you really think that you need to have four drop bags filled with, you know, four different pairs of shoes and three kinds of electrolytes and 13 kinds of carbohydrates and something else to get you through this? It would
psychologically, yes.
Psychologically, and that's fine. But, you know, and so especially the newer you are, you have to think, okay, if I don't have that, oh, my gosh, you know, what's going to happen? Well, it's the same thing as, you know, running from the lion out in the plains and you ran out of water. You know, you're going to do the next best thing. Your body's going to do the next thing it can. So don't worry quite so much about having every little thing in place. I think sometimes just calming yourself down and going, you know, other people have been able to get through this. I'm going to do it too.
You know,
I'm going to listen to my body, and I'm going to drink water when I'm thirsty. And if I feel, when I look at that table, that I want to grab that particular thing, okay, I'm going to try it. If I throw up, okay, I learned. I won't grab it at the next one.
You know, you reminded me of one of my favorite YouTube video clips and stories of Cliff Young, who is a sheep herder, I think, down in Australia. The people that are listening to this podcast right down in Australia are going,
it's
duh.
New Zealand. No, I don't know.
No. I think it was okay. it was Australia, but it was this, you know, sheep herder that went and I apologize, Australians. In fact, I'm going to link the YouTube clip so that I'm justified here.
Tell the story, Scott. Tell the story.
I can't remember the name of the race, but it's a multi-day stage race across Australia.
Yeah.
He showed up in a pair of rubber boots and overalls, and he's a little bit older, and signs up for this race, and the people are saying, oh, you can't run this race. You don't know what you're doing. You're going to get hurt. And the guy kills the record by like 2 days. So
he's a sheep herder, right?
Yeah, all of that is exaggerated because I can't remember the exact story. But my point in bringing this up is simplicity, simplicity, simplicity. That you don't need all this stuff, like Sonny was just saying. Sometimes you just need to go out and run.
Scott, let me fill in some of the details.
Okay.
Because I don't
even know who Cliff Young is, do you?
No, I never watched the clip, but I remember you telling me the story.
No, you did watch the clip because I sent it to you.
Well, then you know
it
was
about 3 years ago.
Okay, but I remember the story on a run because, sometimes when you're running, things stick to you, you know? And so I remember the story, and you said that what he did was start off very slow. And
he did. He shuffled.
Right.
It was the Cliff Young shuffle.
And so he just went along the way, and all these other runners are way out in front, and then they would retire and sleep, and Cliff continued to just shuffle along. And then he broke the course record significantly.
Because he didn't stop.
He didn't stop, and he was slowing down and letting his body, you know, work like it should and not putting himself into deficit.
And I just remembered what his secret nutrition was.
I remember, too.
Do you remember?
Yep.
Goat's milk.
Yep.
Goat's milk.
Goat's milk. Yeah.
What do you think of goat's milk, Sonny?
Well, that's the thing. You know, someone will be able to run on anything. And that's what I caution runners is just because it works for their friend or because it works for some of the top 10 runners. You know, most of the crowd I'm talking to is not the top 10 runners because they are gifted. They are going to be able to do something that the rest of us can't. Maybe they have more fast twitch muscles. Maybe they have a better focused brain. Maybe they have a way of transporting more of their own body fat for fuel. We don't know. But most of us, you know, we need to have some sort of a pattern, and we need to train with that pattern. But those palatable foods to us can be an individual choice. And I think in the future, we're going to be seeing many more actual foods at aid stations. I think we're going to be seeing really some different things. Mother Nature, you know, again, I always go back to that. Mother Nature's not often wrong. And sometimes when we start trying to add too many things into one product, you know, three of those things might have been fine for you, but the fourth didn't work. And for your friend, two of those things might have been great, but the other two didn't work. So if we have things in simpler form, yes, you might have to take two or three of them to get the same thing, but maybe that's okay because maybe there's some part of, especially in sports nutrition products. Some have the fake sugars in it, like sorbitol and mannitol and xylitol. There is a certain part of the population that just, that's just going to be death on them. Their stomachs just can't handle those OL sugar sweeteners. And for the rest of the population, I don't want you to go out and throw out all your food that has it in it, because maybe it never even bothered you.
I had a race about halfway through, and it was one of the longer races. I was looking for a way out. Sometimes you just think, how am I going to explain?
Excuses. Yeah,
how am I? You're starting to convince yourself. Okay, I've got myself convinced. Now, how am I going to convince my crew and my friends? And so a buddy of mine, John Nichols, says you need to have some soy milk. And I'd never had soy milk before, and I thought, perfect. I drink
something on race day.
Yeah, something like this soy milk, a whole quart of it. That'll certainly take me out, right? I never felt better after I drank that quart of soy milk. I was on top of the world.
When you get to that last bit, that's where you have to kind of just go with it. Try something. Okay. A lot of times it'll work because your body's still kind of thinking, you know. Your body's still trying to send you messages. And if the soy milk didn't, you know, if you didn't immediately throw it up, it probably was maybe something in there that you needed. And that's a lot of times how people get their very favorite food, because they've got something that made a change in one race. And it may make a change in that race. And, you know, if it's not working in the next four races, you know, give it up, try another one.
Well, I think, too, that, you know, I've had races where you're near the end of the race and nothing sounds good, but you may have a craving for something unique.
Right.
I remember
if
one
you're
of the,
near the end of the race, go for it.
I remember one of the first 50Ks I ran, somebody was telling me that at the next aid station, which was, I don't know, I was probably 20 miles in or something like that, they said, the next aid station has grilled cheese sandwiches. And I would have never in a million years thought about eating a grilled cheese sandwich on a run. But as soon as I heard that, that's what my body said. That's what I want. So you got to listen to your body.
And that's the thing, is something like grilled cheese sandwiches are not the first race I've heard about grilled cheese sandwiches being in. And you wouldn't think that would be a good food, but it might be the perfect food, especially on white bread and maybe a little cheese to slow down the digestion. You know, for those who are having trouble, that might be the perfect thing. And that's where you have to learn how your body reacts, and we do that by trial and error. Let's hope we have more trial than error. But again, you know, to have that pattern, have something set, and then be flexible if it's not working. And make sure your crew's on that same page, too, so they're not trying to force you back into a pattern that's not working. You know, be adjustable on that. But definitely in the heat, I think, beyond nutrition and different fuel, is slowing down somewhat. Yes, you need probably more water because you're probably going to be thirstier. You probably need a little bit more electrolytes because it's going to help you retain some of that water. But should you, you know, all of a sudden throw your plan out and go with a whole new plan? Probably not.
Many of these aid station workers have brought out their favorite go-to thing, especially during the latter part of a race. People take some time and they roast potatoes with, you know, their favorite seasonings on it. People are brewing up all kinds of great concoctions that have proved to be good for them. And, you know, so we need to thank those folks and take a little taste. There's nothing wrong with a little taste.
I think a lot of times, you know, most of our products are sugar, sugar, sugar. And all of a sudden we have somebody serving up these burritos or something else. And you're going slower than probably anyway. And all of a sudden, that sounds really good. And it might be salty or savory instead of sugary. And your body's saying, okay, that's what I want. I'm like, I've had it on the sugar.
Soup is so good. I'll tell you, there's that chicken broth or the minestrone soup. Those things are just better than an IV, I think.
Mm-hmm. Especially if you want to finish.
you know, Sonny, one thing that you brought up that seems to always be the go-to when you're trying to sort something out, when you're trying to think of something physiologically, and you start to think, what's the answer here?
What would Sonny do? That's a question I ask.
And then Sonny would say, if you're being chased by a lion, that sets the stage for what the answer is going to be. If you're chased by a lion, your body's shutting down some blood, and it's all going from from your, you know, internal core out to every muscle fiber. And so I like how you bring us back to the essentials.
Primitive.
And I want to do that because that's my what might be what gets you out, not trying to figure out too much about what so-and-so's doing or do they need this or what's this. But, okay, my body's under stress. So if I put it back in those terms, you know, what is a stress body? What can a stress body do and what can't a stress body do? And so you want to limit the stress. So you probably don't want to try 15 new things right then.
Right. Well, there's no confusion why you're a great instructor and a teacher in this topic, because you've handled and have taken us through some what could be very confusing and challenging concepts, and you've brought it from a prune to a ripe plum to one that's about to burst. And we've all held those in our hands, and we know the different characteristics of those. And you could have lost us in all kinds of vocabulary, and we would have to go Google things and make charts and do index cards and then re-listen to your podcast. But you bring it down to a level that you know, even if you're on a run right now and you're at mile 20 and your brain isn't firing on all 7 brain cells, you could essentially, you know, retain this stuff and make use of it. So we appreciate your explanation, your power and ability to teach.
Well, thank you. That's important to me because I think if we put too many scientific terms out there, everybody's brain's just going to shut off. So we need to just understand it in a simple way.
What's next for you, Sonny? Did you have something, Scott? No. No, what's next for you? What are you are you kayaking, paddleboarding? Are you running races? What are you doing with
I'm
your body?
I'm helping a swimmer swim across the Sea of Cortez. He tried last year and didn't make it all the way across. It's about 80 miles, but after Diana and I had made 110 miles, we know it's possible. I'm doing a lot of speaking to some swim coaches, to some runners. I'm going to start writing for Swim Magazine, too, so all you athletes and your triathletes out there, you can start reading about swim nutrition,
What magazine is that? Swim Magazine?
Yeah, the National Swim Magazine, right.
Okay.
I'm going to be doing that, and then I'm still writing for Ultra Runner, and I'm speaking on a Runner's World Forum coming up pretty soon, so I got a lot on my plate. And, of course, running and doing everything else.
Do you find that the people out there that are asking questions and you're interacting with, that the knowledge base is just increasing significantly, you know, based on the Internet and podcasts and blogs and access to information?
I think information and education is really ramping up, but unfortunately, I also think the confusion is ramping up.
I agree.
Up.
Well,
we'll
I think
do
there's
another
misinformation.
Podcast and we'll talk about sugar and carbs and paleo and no carbs, low carbs, all of that. That's harder. And it's, I think ultra runners are kind of a lucky little special bunch that have been protected from some of the issues that some of the obesity problems we have in the United States, because they tended not to be obese, which is why they tended to start running, because they could. So I think we don't know all of that, but we all have spouses and kids and friends and relatives that aren't quite so lucky, and I think that is a huge area of confusion right now.
Do you think corporate greediness is sabotaging the good information that's out there, that we're subject to our own demise in a lot of these cases?
I can't say, does a bear do what in the woods?
I just want to throw that out there. As long as you're is it 10 yards off the trail? How far do you have to go off the trail to do that in the woods? There's a rule.
And dig a hole.
Norm Klein, pack it in, pack it out.
Yeah, the food industry is not necessarily our friend at the moment.
Well, Sonny, thank you so much. It has been long overdue. We're so glad that you had some time this evening to talk to us. We consider you a friend and a mentor, and we just love
learning.
The knowledge
yeah,
that you drop.
From you.
Thank you very much. It's always good to be on.
Now go to trailrunnernation.com, check it out, all the old podcasts. I'm going to actually link all of Sonny's podcasts to this one.
All right, do that.
So you can go back. If you're a new listener to Trail Runner Nation and you don't know who Sonny is, shame on you.
Well, you do now. If you made it this far, you know who Sonny is, and you should go back and listen to the other episodes.
Go to trailrunnernation.com. I'll have all of the her previous podcasts listed there so you can go back. I think even if you have listened to those, maybe you should re-download those and listen to them again. Because
I think we should, Scott.
That's the reason I was going to do it, because I'm going to go back and listen to those. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter.
At We Are Nation on Twitter?
Yep.
And we can find Sonny. Sonny, what's your website?
Eat4Fitness.com, yeah. And the 4 is the letter 4.
Eat4Fitness.com. So Sonny Blende's own website. You can find contact for her there.
And please go to Ultra Running Magazine and check out the September issue, which is the one that Sonny wrote about heat.
Hydration and fueling during a scorcher.
Now, what I want to make sure is even if you don't have a hot race coming up, you still need to read this article.
Oh, yeah. This is just basic knowledge. You know, you should before you're able to go and enroll in your next race, you should show competency in this topic.
There should be a certificate that you've read it in order to enter.
I think Sonny will get right behind that. She'll grade those like she grades her students. What's a passing grade? 85% in this particular topic?
I think that'll probably get you to the finish line, yep.
Thank you, Sonny Blende.
Go out and run.
Mas.
All right. Thanks, guys. Bye-bye. As you fall down to the ground, and then someday your friends will stand beside as you are flying. Oh, you were flying all so high. But then someday people look at you. They're what they call their own. They watch you suffer. Yeah, hear you calling home. And then someday we can take our time to brush the leaves.